I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like $1 million.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God. We are The Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, indeed.
I know him as DJ Vlad, but everybody else knows him as Vlad TV. Vlad's here. What up, Vlad?
What's up, Envy?
What's up,
Charlamagne? It's been a minute.
You know, we really can't call you DJ Vlad no more. Why do we still call you DJ Vlad? Just, you haven't been a DJ in
But he started off as a DJ.
He started off as a DJ. That's how I know. He's a mixtape DJ. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, first of all, Vlad, I want to tell you congratulations, because you are responsible for helping the family of Tupac Shakur get justice and closure because of some of your interviews you did with Keefe D on Vlad TV. Yeah. I have already said it. I think you should win a Peabody. If you was any other journalist outside of hip-hop, I think you would get some type of an award for that.
Thank you, man.
How do you feel?
I mean, the purpose wasn't really for him to get locked up or anything else like that, because as I've said before, when Las Vegas PD reached out to me, I didn't respond. Mm-hmm. I didn't cooperate. You know, my whole thing was, this is a story I'd heard for a long time, for close to about 18 years or so. And by actually sitting down with Keefe and getting his whole story from beginning to end, at the end of that interview, I'm like, okay, I pretty much solved the case at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, shout out to Greg Kading, who actually got the original Keefe D confession. But in terms of the public, that was the first time Keefe actually told the entire story of how it happened, what led up to it, what happened that night, mm-hmm. what happened afterwards. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, ultimately, I don't think anyone could really be surprised at the outcome.
I was going to ask, you know, during the interview, because it's crazy, when he was arrested, you go down this rabbit hole of things that, you know, that you've investigated, that you've done interviews with. I thought from maybe the interviews, it made it seem like he had a deal already on the table. Yeah. Was any of that true? Like, I thought that was the reason why he was able to talk about it.
Right. So he had a proffer agreement. So when Greg Kading met up with him, Keefe D was
Who's Greg
facing...
Kading?
Greg Kading was an LAPD investigator.
Yep.
Who was looking into the entire case. So he had caught Keefe in this huge PCP ring, and Keefe was facing life in prison. So what happened was, there's something called a proffer agreement, AKA Queen for a Day, mm-hmm. meaning that you could sit down with someone and they could ask you a whole bunch of questions, and you could admit to all the crimes you did that day, and you can't be charged with any of those crimes. And in exchange, they dropped the whole PCP case against him. He was able to walk free. But the thing about proffer agreements, from what I understand, is that it's called Queen for a Day because it's only valid that particular day. So if you choose to retell that story afterwards, you could potentially get charged for it. It's a little bit of a gray area. You know, and I think that his lawyer is probably going to be fighting in terms of that. But I think Keefe was under the assumption that he said it once, he could say it as many times as he wants. And I don't think that's the case when it comes to proffer agreements.
When you say that Vegas police wanted you to cooperate, what did that mean?
I think they wanted the raw footage. Okay. I mean, I actually have the voicemails from them, like, oh, we've been trying to reach you and everything else like that. And I think they thought that maybe there was a bunch of things in, because we did two interviews, that they could use in the case that we didn't publicly release. But if you know Vlad TV, and both of you have been on Vlad TV, we use damn near every second of the footage. So they're kind of barking up the wrong tree. But my whole thing was that if someone interviews on my platform, I'm not going to turn around and then work with the police against them.
Correct.
Regardless of what it is that they said. It's just business-wise, you know, in terms of my values, it's not what I do. So I didn't choose to cooperate.
By the way, what could they ask you that they didn't hear themselves?
Like, it's all out there.
It's
all out there. And he's done multiple interviews. It's not just Vlad TV.
Art of Dialogue.
Yeah, he did that. He did a few other ones. So it's kind of like...
He wrote a book.
He wrote a book. Well, and that's the whole thing. People thought that I got this whole confession out of the blue. Like, before we did the interview, we got a copy of the book. We read through the entire book. Mm-hmm. And that interview was, the blueprint of that interview was that book. So there were certain parts where I asked him a question. He didn't really want to answer it. Mm-hmm. And my thing was like, well, the book says X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And then so he had to kind of address that. But if you write a book about a crime, I have no problems interviewing you about the book that you wrote.
Yeah.
Well, I had a question. You know, you did this Keefe D interview how long ago?
4 years ago.
4 years ago.
Yep.
Isn't it kind of strange that he's arrested recently opposed to, because, I mean, the book was out before you did the interview. So it almost seemed like nobody cared until actually you did the interview and it started getting a little press.
Man, the wheels of justice turn slowly. You know, it takes a while to line everything up. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I guess. I mean, I'm not involved in the case, and it's really up to Las Vegas PD and Keefe at the end of the day. But it takes a while to line something up, especially as epic and huge as this. And it happened, 26 years ago?
Yeah.
Back in 1996. Like, a lot has to be done in order to get a conviction. And it's not easy, because the last thing that they want to do is go and spend, you know, whatever, potentially millions of dollars on a case for it to be found not guilty or just dismissed.
Right.
And it's not even just the Keefe D interview that I think, you know, I would say constitutes you winning something like a Peabody. It's all the interviews you did surrounding it. It's the Gray Kading. Who else? If this was the Vlad Cinematic Universe, what would be all the interviews you got to watch to get the full story?
I mean, Greg Kading, who's the lead investigator, Chris Carroll, who was the first responder that showed up, you know, at the scene after Pac got shot and Suge got grazed. Edie Amin, who was in the car behind Tupac when he got killed.
That was the young ladies that followed him?
No.
It was one of the outlaws.
Yeah. Edie's part of the outlaws.
I didn't know if he was in that car with the young ladies. No.
Well, there were no young ladies in the car. It was like the cars were driving around and a bunch of girls were like, Tupac. And then Pac like popped out the window and was like, yo, what up? You know, so the ladies, you know, and I think Edie told me that he thought that maybe it was a setup by those girls, but it wasn't. I guess the girls even got interviewed at one point. They were like, no, we just saw Tupac. We were calling out to him. And that's... By them calling out Tupac, that's how Keefe and them saw that, oh, Tupac is right here, and they'd been looking for him.
Mm-hmm. So watch the Keefe, Gray Kading,
Edie, I mean, Chris Carroll. Uh-huh. Yeah, just a lot of pieces.
Gotcha.
Put together.
Now, did he ever say, was Pac the intended target, or was it Suge the intended target? Because I did see that they thought Pac was grabbing a gun, allegedly, and they were returning fire, or something like that.
Yeah, he didn't really... When I pressed him on that, he didn't really, you know, admit to that. But from everything I heard, like, I remember I talked to the co-writer of that book. Mm-hmm. And he told me that when he first met up with Keefe, he was like, look, man, I'm very pro-black. I'm very positive. How do you feel about, you know, your role in, you know, killing one of our great
hip-hop icons?
And Keefe's response was, they had no business putting their hands on my nephew like that. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is like, everyone is so shocked because it's Tupac. But right now, somewhere in America, some some, you know, gang affiliate, gang member just got beat up and is out there grabbing their gun right now to go retaliate.
Of course.
This is standard procedure when it comes to this type of world. So everyone's shocked because it's Tupac, and we love Tupac. But this is how things happen in this type of lifestyle, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, yeah. How was Pac's family respond to you?
I haven't spoken directly to them, but a friend of mine who knows one of Pac's sisters on his biological father's side, said, you know, the family says, thank you so much for, you know, bringing some level of closure. But, you know, you also got to understand that he's just got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't get convicted.
Yeah.
I've gotten arrested. Like, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Doesn't mean that I went to prison. Like, anyone can get arrested. So it's just the beginning of the process.
Have you gotten any threats from this ever since? No. Not at all.
You
know, it's interesting when you say your intention wasn't to solve the case. So I guess people would say, what is the point of doing all of these interviews? What is Vlad TV's intention when he puts together all of these different interviews?
Well, I mean, when I say solve the case, my intention wasn't for him to be convicted,
gotcha.
Put him in jail. Like, I'm just a huge Tupac fan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you know, I loved Tupac. All Eyes on Me is one of my favorite all-time albums. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's just such a charismatic individual. I mean, you could, it'd be hard to argue that Tupac is not the greatest rapper of all time. You know, like, shout out to Biggie, shout out to Nipsey, but if you look at worldwide, you see more Tupac murals around the world than any other rapper. And that's because I think that outside of the rapping and the good songs, there's a social commentary involved in what he did. There was the struggle that everyone in every country could really relate to. So my whole thing is like, oh, this is my favorite rapper and here's a story that's unsolved, but like everyone in LA knew this story. It was like the worst kept secret in LA, so let's try to put it out there and bring it out to the public, because there's so many conspiracy theories around it. Suge had him killed, the government had him killed, he's in Cuba somewhere. Like you know what I mean, he's still alive, he's, you know, he faked his own death. It's like a lot of it was so ridiculous that I wanted to put a piece together that had all the different angles of the same story, and they're all matching up. Chris Carroll's story matches up. You know, Idi Amin's story matches up. You know, Greg Kading's story matches up. And then Keefe's story is the last puzzle piece in that.
Now, you were supposed to interview Keefe D again before he was raided?
Yeah.
What was that going to be about, or what conversation was that going to be? Or did he reach out to you? Or
Yeah, he reached out to me. We had a conversation. He had already gotten arrested. When he already got his house got raided, or his wife's house got raided.
And did they find a gun in there that they believe?
They found bullets, which had no. I mean, who's going to keep bullets from a
27 years old? Yeah.
Murder, like, it's crazy. But yeah, his house got raided, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to leave it alone. But then he reached out to me, had a conversation with me, and then, you know, his co-writer was the one who I kind of communicate with a lot when it comes to this type of thing. They're like, he wants to do another interview. And it's like, all right, you know, we gave him a deposit, you know, on the interview. He hadn't asked for it
before. He paid for an interview.
Yeah, I paid for both of his interviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Vlad pays for a lot of interviews. People don't know that. It's like, he does.
Yeah. Well, for certain interviews. And other ones I don't pay for.
Like your regulars?
My regular guests all get paid.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. Because
Boosie and TK Kirkland.
All my regular guests get paid. If you see him on Vlad TV over and over again, you know, we make money, so we choose to compensate our guests.
That's dope.
As well. So, I mean, he reached out. We gave him like a small deposit. wasn't really a lot of money. And I figured that I'm probably not going to see this again because, you know, his house got raided. And I was hearing that there was a grand jury underway and there was a possible indictment coming. And from what I understand, he hit up a few other outlets and got deposits from all of them. So I think he was just trying to gather up money because he knew that he was about to go away. So it is what it is. To me, it's not a big deal, and it was to be expected.
Any truth to the rumor that he had like cancer or something? That's why he was like,
well, originally 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I remember if you watched the BET interview that he did, he said that he has cancer. So but from what I understand, he beat it or is in remission or something like that. So I think there's a certain degree of, I have cancer and I don't give a F about it. And I think there's also a certain degree of, when the tapes got released, like, you know, for example, I talked to like BG Knockout, who was friends with Orlando. Like, I was told that his family was like really upset over these confession tapes, you know, and him saying that, you know, that Orlando did and everything else like that. So there was the whole snitch tag that people were putting on him. And I think to a certain degree, he wanted to clear his name and get his side of the story out there.
Gotcha.
I mean, me personally, when it comes to murder, it's no statute of limitations. I would have just kept my mouth shut. But I mean, like I said, they wanted to do it. So we did the interview.
Now, you know, this situation doesn't help the rumors or the stigma of the Vlad curse.
Vlad is the feds. Vlad is the police.
Vlad curse, Vlad is the feds. People say a lot of folks get jammed up after they interview with you. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel bad or regret doing those interviews after folks get caught?
Well, this is the first interview that I'm aware of that any level of footage that we recorded is actually going to be used in a criminal case.
Mm-hmm.
Like every other interview we've ever done, people have talked about things they did in the past. And if they chose to do a crime after the interview, it has nothing to do with anything in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying? So it's kind of like the stigma is the stigma, man. Like people going to say Vlad's the police, Vlad is the feds. I've heard it literally for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately it's just not true. But in this case, I mean, it is true to a certain degree. And, you know, if people are mad at me for helping to solve the murder of the greatest rapper of all time, I'm okay with that.
You've been mixing it up a lot this year, Vlad. Like, it feel like it's this year. Like, now I was wondering, is that you really tweeting?
Yeah, that's me.
How do you pick and choose what you want to talk about or who you want to say something to?
I mean, things I feel strongly about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the fact that some of these tweets have gotten 3, 4, 5, 7 million impressions is a little bit surprising.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I have a huge Twitter account. I have like maybe 200,000 followers, but clearly some things I said have hit a nerve with people.
I wonder if Vlad, the personality, helps Vlad TV grow even more. Do you think like you being more active, doing more interviews, being more active on social media, do you think that helps the channel grow?
I mean, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Probably. I mean, listen, you could do all the tricks that you want, but ultimately it comes down to strong content.
Mm-hmm.
When we have strong content, the channel grows and things do well. Yes, you could try to go viral and everything else like that, but people don't realize that a lot of times going viral doesn't necessarily help your business.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? We've had so many interviews, like, you know, for example, when Gloria Velez interviewed Neo and he talked about the whole trans kids thing, mm-hmm. about how he doesn't support like a kid that's like 12 years old becoming mm-hmm. trans, like, you know, the parents need to step in. That went super viral and it was on TMZ and it was everything else like that. But a lot of times those videos, they go viral that are not on your own platform. So mm-hmm. there'll be like a TikTok that has like 5 million views mm-hmm. and a Twitter video that has 2 million
right.
views. But the video on YouTube has like 50,000 views.
Right.
You know, and it just gets stuck there. You know, overall, that interview lost money. So people have to understand going viral and being financially successful aren't always hand in hand.
Oh, yeah. I always tell folks that I put value over viral. I think this generation puts viral over actual value.
Yeah.
Like, there's platforms that have actual value, consistent value, as opposed to these platforms who you might see every now and then go viral, but it ain't translating into no dollars.
Mm-hmm. We run a business, man. We have 20 employees. Like, my focus is on the business, not going viral. Being viral is cool, and it's nice to have a look here and there and so mm-hmm. forth, but it's like we've been doing it for 15 years, and it's really about the business and the catalog and the important interviews that we put out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, also, recently you did an open letter to, I would call it an open letter.
An open letter.
It was kind of like an open letter, his thoughts. An open tweet to Drake and Khaled.
Correct.
Now, why did you feel like you wanted to write a tweet to them?
Well, you sort of see what's been happening, right? When you look at the Gaza-Israel situation, it's horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And I put out a statement about that myself, where I said that I feel sorry for all the citizens, you know, from Israel and Palestine that are caught up in what their leaders are choosing to do.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? I don't agree with what Netanyahu has done in Gaza in terms of blockading the country and creating essentially an open-air prison. And I definitely don't support what Hamas did in terms of killing hundreds of people, beheading babies, and everything else like that. It's a serious topic. And when I sat back and looked at it, it's like, okay, Drake is the most famous Jewish person on earth, essentially, right? Who mm-hmm. else could do a tour and fill out coliseums worldwide who's Jewish besides Drake, right? Khaled is the most famous Palestinian in the world, but neither one of them has said anything about this at all.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, well, they're not politicians, whatever. They influence hundreds of millions of people, which ultimately has an influence on the world. And you're not choosing to say anything. And Drake, who has a Jewish mother, you know, which by Jewish law makes him Jewish. But not only that, his parents got divorced when he was 5 years old, and he grew up with his Jewish mother and her Jewish relatives in Forest Hills, which is a Jewish community in Toronto. He had a bar mitzvah. And then when this happens, he doesn't say anything because I think that he doesn't want to potentially affect his record sales.
But why does he have to say anything? Why does him or Khaled have to say anything publicly?
They don't have to say anything. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying as representatives of these communities, their voices are powerful and they should say something. Just like I have said something.
What are they supposed to say though? But you're educated on the topic, clearly.
And they don't have people around them to educate them? They have access to the highest level of everybody. You know what I mean? In terms of professors, experts, and so forth.
But even being educated on something don't mean you have an understanding of it to be able to express it. And you don't want somebody to craft something for you and just post it on your social media. And I've been watching celebrities all week, you know, say some of the stupidest shit. Like, I saw Justin Bieber post pray for Israel, but he put up a picture of Palestine and had to pray for Israel over the picture of Palestine. So it's kind of like one of those things, if you really don't know what you're talking about, you probably should just sit it out.
But you probably should learn about it because, I mean, this is, before Drake was a rapper, he was Jewish. Before Khaled was a super producer, he was Palestinian. Like, this runs deep. You know what I'm saying? That this is the essence of who they are, of their families and their communities. Like, Drake was raised in a Jewish community. I'm sure his relatives feel a certain type of way about this. And look, like, Drake has taken all types of shots at Kanye. But when Kanye went on his Hitler rants, Drake didn't say anything specifically about that. But he takes shots at him.
Mm-hmm. I guess Vlad is saying, like, if something happened with George Floyd or something happened in our community and you say absolutely positively nothing as a black person.
Right.
I don't think you have to, though. I think if that's your thing, sure. But I don't think you're obligated
You're not obligated, but yeah. I feel that you should say something in your position. And my example was Tupac. When something happens that's close to his community, Pac was going to say
Tupac
something.
Tupac was a one-on-one, though, Vlad.
Well, like, Tupac. Yeah, but the caliber of, you know, like, where Drake is, where Tupac was, is equivalent.
I'm talking about one-on-one as far as the type of people they were. Like, Tupac was socially conscious. You know, like, Tupac's mother was a radical, a Black Panther. That's not who those
see,
people
I,
are.
I'm not, I'm, I don't really know what's going on over there to speak on, but I get what you're saying, right? Yeah. Because if you look at what happened in our community during the time with George Floyd and people were protesting, I think everybody that had a little bit of influence said something, whether it was LeBron James, whether it's a comedian, whether it's a celebrity, whether it's an actor
all
or
all those
actress.
People always do, though.
LeBron has just chimed in.
But
you know
LeBron's
what I'm saying?
Always chiming in on social issues. That's what he's chosen
to do. But then again,
right,
Michael Jordan has, right? And people were saying Michael Jordan didn't.
Michael Jordan never has.
I guess it's the same
thing.
And there's a criticism with him about that. Like, I've chimed in. I've chimed in about all these issues.
But you always do.
I chimed in about George Floyd. Mm-hmm. I mean, we donated to NAACP during the whole George Floyd riots and everything else like that. Like, mm-hmm. I stand behind. Like, I'm not just sitting there pointing fingers. Like, I put my neck on the line with saying things about it that other people didn't like. But ultimately, I feel like when you're at a certain level, like, you have a responsibility because you have so many people. Like, you could shift global thought with just a simple statement.
But Ja Rule doesn't agree.
Shift global. I don't know if you can
shift. They interviewed Ja Rule about my statement.
I saw that. But see, when I saw your statement, I thought of Ja Rule. I was like, I don't want to hear from Drake and Khaled at a time like this. You know what I mean? Because to me, I'm like, what if Drake and Khaled are doing things behind the scenes? I think that's more powerful than a tweet or an Instagram post. Like, you're not going to change people's minds on a 75-year-old situation. How long has this been going on for how long?
Thousands of years.
Thousands?
Yes.
Oh, shoot. I know it's thousands. I thought it was like 75.
Israel's been around for 75, but there's been a conflict that's been going on forever. I mean, you could trace it back to biblical times, is what I'm saying. It's a very complicated, messed up situation, and I honestly, my heart goes out to both parties.
And that's exactly that. When I'm at home watching CNN and MSNBC, I don't know where people are from. Mm-hmm. All I see is people hurt, people
innocent
dead.
People.
I don't know if
civilians,
they're Palestinian,
babies,
Israel. I'm just this is terrible.
20-some like, Americans got killed.
Damn.
In the process. I mean, they went to a festival and just open fired.
I knew that,
killing hundreds. And then you know, they went and started cutting off babies' heads. Like, it's horrific.
No, it's horrible.
It's horrific, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not a fan of, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people feel like if you say anything bad about the Israeli government, you're anti-Semitic. And I think that that's stupid. That's like saying you have to support Trump or else you're anti-American.
Mm-hmm.
No, you could not like Trump and be pro-American. Mm-hmm. You could not like Netanyahu and be pro-Jewish. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like the people are caught up in this bullshit. You know what I mean? I mean, do you think that the people in Gaza are happy that their buildings are being destroyed because Hamas chose to do this, you know, crazy, you know, attack? Mm-hmm. Now people are homeless. People are, you know, have no electricity. I heard the main power plant just got taken out. You know, they're just trying to live their lives. And now they're caught up in a situation that other people have thrown them into. Mm-hmm. And it's fucked up. And I don't want it to turn into a Jewish versus Muslim, Muslim versus Jewish thing, because I have very close Muslim friends. Mm-hmm. You know, shout out to Napoleon. Mm-hmm. You know, shout out to, you know, a lot of people who I deal with, who I have a lot of love for. But yeah, man, it's sad.
I just don't want us to have a, because I already think America has like a healthy, unhealthy obsession with celebrity. Yeah. And like we always looking for celebrity to fix the world problems. Like when I saw it, I promise you, the first time I heard about this, I did not think of Drake or Khaled. I went to people like scholars and academics, people I know who actually know things about this situation. And I asked them, yo, man, you know, what kind of global impact is this going to have? Or, you know, what exactly is happening right now?
Right.
You know, that's the people I want to hear from.
Yeah, but like Charlamagne, like before you were on the radio, you were black.
Absolutely.
And you had to deal, you have a black family and you understand black issues. Like, you know, like you could end your, like you could walk out of the Breakfast Club right now and become a private citizen and never have to do anything, but you'll still be black. You know what I'm saying? So it's like certain things should run deep with you, you know, with everyone.
Well, we don't know if they don't though. Like, we don't know how Drake or Khaled feel about it. What do we want, an Instagram post? A tweet? Like,
yeah, that's true, because we don't know what they're doing. They could be behind the scenes doing stuff. Name, or it could be like Floyd sending a jet, you know?
Name me a more famous Palestinian than Khaled.
I'm with you, but I don't know how he feels about this. I can't say he don't feel anything about this situation because he didn't post
but he's not.
It.
But he's not speaking about it. But he's speaking about his new Jordans. You know what I'm saying? He's doing sneaker shopping right now. Mm-hmm. You know, Drake is doing this whole like literally writing paragraphs about Joe Budden because his feelings were hurt over album criticisms. So it's not like they're too busy. They have time to put out things. You know, like, for example, like Andrew Tate was disparaging Canadian men. Did you see that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. He was saying, oh, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. He was saying, oh, a man from Canada, there's no such thing. Drake responds, green light on Andrew Tate. So when Canada gets insulted, he needs to come up and say something. But when his own community that he grew up with, his mother, his everyone's like that, he's remaining silent.
You want him to put green light on Hamas?
No, I do not want him to do that. Absolutely not. I'm not going to stand behind that. No.
Jesus.
But I feel like he should say something. And I mean, clearly, Drake knows about me. He sees this. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure this is on his radar. I'm sure this is on Khaled's radar. I mean, especially now, you know, I mean, the tweet has like 3 million impressions. But, you know.
And by the way, it's only been what? When did it happen?
Yesterday.
No, I'm talking about when did the festival happen?
A couple days ago.
Yeah, people turn
weekend.
Too.
Weekend, yeah.
Well, hopefully.
Because people of that power and that, you know, with that influence, to your point, they can't just randomly jump out there and post something. They want to probably take a beat and let's figure out something really powerful to do. Like I heard Floyd Mayweather sending like
his jet, private jet with supplies. Right. Yeah,
you know, that's something that takes thought. Like I don't want to just post like everybody else. I want to come out and actually do something for people.
So Drake took a lot of thought when he was talking about Joe Budden being broke and flying first class on special occasions.
It took like 2 days.
He has a 767 jet, and like, you know what I'm saying? Like, people choose to do what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to stand behind this. These are two very powerful voices, and they have huge fan bases behind them. And right now we're in a very divisive time where people are taking sides. And
which I don't understand, by the way.
But this is the reality. People are taking sides. And, you know, people are getting canceled and losing their jobs, mm-hmm. everything else like that over it. And I'm not saying to say ridiculous, crazy things, but, you know, I put out a tweet that basically said, I feel sorry for both, you know, I really feel sorry for both parties and the people that are getting caught up in it, you know, regardless of what my background is. And something like that could be said and put together by one of these guys or both of them without getting canceled or ruining their careers. But I think ultimately, And in my tweet, I think they're too worried about staying relevant, staying hot, and not getting a certain group of people not supporting them anymore. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just don't see what a Drake or Khaled post is going to do to change anything that's going on over there.
Did you see what John Lennon did when he was alive? John Lennon, Leonard Peltier, I think John Lennon did a whole thing where he got behind it. It was like this Native American guy who was arrested for protesting. And there's a whole story behind it. And he did a whole concert behind him and everything else like that. And Leonard Peltier ended up being freed. Because at the end of the day, John Lennon was such a huge voice.
That's a different circumstance, though. Like, that's an actual action. That's somebody who's in prison. I don't know what he was in prison for. But you hold a concert, you raise awareness to it. Like, I don't see, what could Drake and Khaled do to stop a thousand-year-old war?
Drake did a Free Larry Hoover concert.
That makes more sense. Because that's an actual action. Like, that's something they raise awareness for it. Hopefully Larry Hoover can get free. Like, what could they do to stop a thousand-year-old war?
They can't stop. And, you know, and he didn't stop Larry Hoover from still being in prison, right? Mm-hmm. Larry Hoover's still locked up. But he put his voice out there and he put his support out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it may make a difference in the long run. You know what I'm saying? Like these are powerful voices.
You're just saying that they have these platforms you'd like
yes.
to see. I understand what you're saying. I've never seen them do that, so I don't know why they would.
And they haven't.
Them. Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. And this is why I think that as time goes on and we're talking about many years in the future, people are still talking about Tupac to this day.
Absolutely.
Because of what he said, because of what he did and what he stood for. And other people are just going to be pop artists that, you know, after they pass away and their fans eventually start to pass away, their relevance will pass away as mm-hmm. well. They won't live on for, you know, eternity like the iconic people that I mentioned, mm-hmm. like a Tupac or a Bob Marley.
Mm-hmm.
But they're free and to do whatever it is, you know, whatever they want to do. I'm just putting out my opinion on it.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back for 1 second because I just thought about something and maybe yeah. you could clear it up. So recently in the news, people are saying that Diddy was partly responsible for Pac being killed and he lined mm-hmm. Pac up.
Yeah.
Now, with all these interviews, have anybody said anything close to that or even
hell yeah.
nailed that?
Okay. So according to Keefe D, mm-hmm. He had a meeting with Puffy. And according to him, Puffy said, I'll give $1 million to get rid of Tupac and Suge because they're putting all this pressure on me and everything else like that. This is not my words. These are Keefe's words.
Okay.
I remember I interviewed Greg Kading about it because he questioned Keefe about this. From Greg Kading's point of view, it didn't sound like, okay, if you do this, I'm going to give this money to you and here's how we're going to do it and so forth. It was more of a frustration. It was like two people talking like, man, I can't stand these guys. I'll do anything to get rid of them. You know, according to Greg Kading. So the shooting happened. According to Keefe, in our interview, he said that Puffy called him and said, was that us? Don't know if it's true or not.
Mm.
This is strictly according to Keefe. Now, when you look at, when you go deeper into the story, Keefe said that Eric Von Zipp, who was an affiliate, a New York guy who was an affiliate of Puffy, was the one that gave him the gun to do the shooting that night. And according to Keefe, Puffy gave $1 million to Eric Von Zipp to then hand over to Keefe for the shooting. But, you know, according to the people involved, Eric Von Zipp kept the money for himself. Now, did this happen? Did this not happen? I don't know. I interviewed TK Kirkland, who was roommates with Eric Von Zipp, very close friends. When I asked, do you think this is probable? He said, knowing Eric Von Zipp, yeah, that's probably what happened. I remember I interviewed Mike Tyson, and he talked about how him and Von Zipp essentially...
Is Von Zipp alive now?
No, he's dead.
He's dead, okay.
Yeah, he died of cancer some years back. This is why we're able to kind of freely talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Tyson told me a story in our interview how he was hanging out with Von Zipp and like Don King came up with a bag of money and Eric Von Zipp essentially robbed him for the money. He's like, hey, hold on, let me just hold on to this and kind of pushed Don King out the door and they just kept the money.
Dang.
So Zipp has a history of robbing people, mm-hmm. essentially. So did this happen? Did this not happen? Did Puffy really pay $1 million? Did Puffy say that they want him dead? It's hard to say. But 26 years later, with Puffy having the best lawyers the money could buy, with a bunch of hearsay, with convicted felons and so forth, I do not see Puffy getting convicted for any of this
stuff. No, that's kind of crazy of people to be even putting that out there. Like, why are people wishing that on Puff? Like, I asked him in the last interview.
I
forgot about that. Like, somebody posted that yesterday. Yeah, I was like, I forgot I even asked Puff that. I don't even know what doc I was referencing when I asked him that.
Yeah, you asked him that.
Yeah.
Bravo.
And he was like, we don't entertain nonsense.
Right, we don't entertain nonsense. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
All right. So what's next for Vlad TV? I see you stepping out of the rain. You're doing more than just interviews. I see you doing cars, automobiles. I see you doing houses. I see you doing a little bit of everything.
Yeah, man. We did a car feature on your part of your car collection.
That's right.
We did a feature on Boosie Estates.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his 88-acre estate. We actually have a whole feature we haven't put out yet on LeVar Ball's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for me, MTV Cribs was a very important show in my life. Because I grew up, you know, as a middle-class kid in the Bay Area. I didn't have, you know, access to mansions and everything else like that. And seeing these celebrities in these houses was like, it was so inspirational.
Inspiring, yeah, me too.
And I remember, I just thought about this recently, about how my favorite episode on Cribs was Tommy Lee's house in Calabasas. And I remember just watching, I'm like, yo, this house is beautiful. The area is beautiful. Fast forward to 2022, I bought a house in Calabasas, not too far from Tommy Lee's house. And I just thought about how that show, you know, without me thinking about it, influenced me all these years to go accomplish, to go get that. And, you know, when you look at the Boosie episode and Boosie Estates, like, it's such a great episode. I mean, it's gotten like 2 million views. Boosie bought 88 acres and built like a 30,000 square foot house and built like six other houses. There's like five houses in the back for his kids with streets named after his kids and his dead homies, two basketball courts and everything else like that. And what Boosie said,
he bought a community.
He built a whole town around him. And like, you know real estate, obviously. Mm-hmm. When I buy a house, when you bought a house, you probably think about the resale value.
Correct.
You think, I might not live here forever, so let me make sure I get the right area and I can resell it at some later point if I choose to go somewhere else or if I need the money.
Mm-hmm.
Boosie was just all in. No one's going to buy Boosie's estate because it's so specific to what he did. I've never seen anyone just go all in their own dreams and for their own family.
I love it.
I love it. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love it. And it's just like...
That's amazing to me, though.
And he even said, like, yo, I got out of prison. He had lost his house while he was in prison because he had a mortgage. He lost everything. Lost his house, lost his cars. And he said, okay, when I get out, he just bought the land. And he was like, yo, I just built it week by week. 20,000 here, 30,000 here. You know, the main house took a while to build. Then he built this and he built that. And every time he would get show money or whatever else, he would just put a little something extra on it because there were like crews working on the house mm-hmm. when I was over there. And it's just, he's like, yo, if I could do it, anyone could do it. And like, you look at the comments like, yo, I'm so inspired. Like so many people are like, I'm going to do this.
That was actually, before you telling me this, that was a dream of mine that I had. I can never do it, but I always thought it'd be dope if you can buy your own acres like this and your family lives in your own town.
Yes. Why can't you do it?
I mean, you can, but it's expensive in New Jersey, New York.
I got mad acres.
Yeah, you
got
to go down south.
But then also,
South Carolina,
New York and LA, that's hard to do.
Yeah, you got to run your kids in New York, Jersey. But then also, you don't know if your kids want to live there. But I thought it would be dope where you have your own community where, you know, he could put a gate on it and that gate enters into Boosie's house, his daughter's house, his son's house, his, you know, sister-in-law's house, his mother, where you have your own thing. Yeah. So it's like you have your own community, your own basketball court, your own water. So you don't have to supply, you don't have to depend on anybody.
Yes.
And I just thought that was dope. I always thought that was amazing. Even if I could buy every house on my block where, you know, I could go next door to my kid's house, go next door to my daughter's house. I just thought that would be next across the street to mama house. Like, I just thought that would be dope. So I commend Boosie for doing that.
Oh, yeah. People talk about multi-generational wealth, but they don't. Usually it's just a catchphrase.
Right. Right.
Like you're actually seeing him create multi-generational wealth, this huge property that's going to be part of Boosie's family. And he has like, I think, nine kids or something like that. It's like, yo, like he has a big family and he has a place for that family to live.
That's dope.
And it's amazing. So we're going to do a lot more house features,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot more house features just to inspire people, really.
I love it. I love it. Well, we appreciate you for joining us. Vlad TV, tell them how to check you out, follow you and all that good stuff.
What interview should we be checking out right now?
I got a Lero Cohen interview that's about to drop.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yep, that's going to be a big one. In the interview, actually, I asked him, I said, are you the most powerful person in music? He was like, no, definitely not. I'm like, well, you're the global head of YouTube music. YouTube is the biggest music platform on earth. So by default, does that make you the most powerful person in music? He's like, no, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. But that's a very dope interview that's coming out. There's a new Faison Love interview mm-hmm. that's out. I mean, just a bunch of stuff in the works.
Where?
A bunch of stuff in the works. But the Lero Cohen one is sort of a special one that I've been holding on to for a little while.
Gotcha.
Okay. Well, ladies
DJ
and gentlemen,
Vlad.
Vlad TV. And it's the Breakfast Club.
Thank you, man.
Wake that ass up.
Early in the morning.
The Breakfast Club.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old Richmond, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, oh, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Join late night legend Jon Stewart and the best news team for today's biggest headlines, exclusive extended interviews, and more. Now this is a second term we can all get behind. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.